I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
The most important thing to remember is that doctors are supposed to help heal, not kill.
Analysis of the push to legalize assisted suicide in the United States.
Soccer moms don't like this. Joe the plumber doesn't like this. It's incredibly unpopular. It's like a 70-30, 80-20 issue.
A win for women's sports. Ryan Anderson weighs in on the Trump administration's battle against the transgender movement.
We provide this environment where they can just, you know, live their lives, continue their education, be with other friends that are going through the same thing they're going through.
And a study in success. Learn more about a unique program on a college campus in North Carolina.
The pro-death lobby, the pro-assisted suicide lobby is, you know, they want every state in the union and D.C. to have assisted suicide. And so it's no surprise that they're going after Indiana. They probably think, well, if we can get Indiana, then that'll be a toehold to get other parts of the Midwest. I think people are waking up to the fact that this really is dangerous. You have, the disability groups are really aligned as opposing assisted suicide. And of course, a lot of doctors' groups are too.
That was Kevin Terrio from Alliance Defending Freedom. His organization is among those fighting against assisted suicide. Currently, assisted suicide, also known as medical aid in dying, is legal in 10 U.S. states and the District of Columbia. Indiana's efforts are part of the 2025 legislative calendar. Democrat Matt Pierce introduced the End of Life Option Act, which would allow people with a terminal illness to request medication to bring about their own death. The patient would self-administer the dosage. The End of Life Option Act also prohibits an insurer from denying payments of benefits under a life insurance policy based on a suicide clause if the death is the result of medical aid in dying. The Catholic Church strongly opposes assisted suicide. Bishop Mark Hageman from the Diocese of Saskatoon in Canada recently spoke out against euthanasia, saying in part, quote, "If we do not engage in calling each other to a greater and fuller humanity, we should then not be surprised at the larger deterioration of a culture of human care and respect." The Catechism of the Catholic Church says in part, quote, "Those whose lives are diminished or weakened deserve special respect. Sick or handicapped persons should be helped to lead lives as normal as possible." It also calls assisted suicide, quote, "morally unacceptable," adding, "even if death is thought imminent, the ordinary care owed to a sick person cannot be legitimately interrupted." One Catholic author writing in the American Conservative asks if 2025 will be the year of assisted suicide. And the author of that piece joins us now. Nick Rowan is the managing editor of The Lamp magazine. Nick, great to be with you.
Good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. In your article, you write that in the coming years, the movement to add the right to die in states across the U.S. will make gains. What makes you say that?
Well, it could make gains. The hope is that it doesn't. But it's a well-funded and it's an intelligent movement that attempts to work in states where the margins are narrow enough that it can get legislative wins. And so it's something to be aware of.
And your article mentions support for assisted suicide, particularly in New York. Can you tell us more about this push in the Empire State?
Yeah, it's a bill that gets brought up almost every year. And the movement there is slowly, you know, pulling together a majority. They're not there yet. They don't have the governor, you know, the Democratic governor's support. But they say that they're confident and that they're going to be able to pull it off. It's not the only state that is, that is working toward this. Recently, Maryland and Delaware both very narrowly struck down a push for assisted suicide bills in the last 2 years.
Yeah, and could you talk to us a little bit more about Delaware?
Yeah, sure. So last year, the assisted suicide bill in Delaware, which, these bills throughout the country are all basically the same bill, landed on the governor's desk. It had been passed by both bodies of the state legislature, and the governor, John Carney, who is a Democrat and he's out of office now, he refused to sign it. He looked at it and said, "Well, I'm Catholic, and also I believe that the first duty of a doctor is to heal, not to harm. So I can't sign this in good conscience." And he threw it back. And I mean, that's how close the bill came to passing in Delaware. The new governor this year has said that if it landed on his desk, he would sign it. And the
Okay.
bill is up for contention again.
Wow. And how have church leaders in the United States responded? And in your opinion, are faith leaders and lay people doing enough?
I think in general they're doing a good job. This is a hard battle. Moral questions always are. And last year there were 20 bills that came up in state legislatures, and none of them passed. And a good part of the reason for that is because, members of the church and state level organizations have done a good job of informing people what assisted suicide really entails. The challenge, though, is that the other side of this debate is very committed, is not going to give up, and will push until they can get assisted suicide legal in as many states as possible.
And can you tell us what the polling in the United States says on this issue? And can anything be done to turn those numbers around?
Well, I don't know. The polling is very interesting on this question. When you ask people, bare question, should assisted suicide be legal? Should euthanasia be legal for people who are terminally ill? The majority of people will say yes. And then it gets more interesting when you start asking more questions about, for instance, do you think assisted suicide is moral? About 50% of people will still say yes. But 40%, which is a significant plurality, will say no, definitely not. And this is where the interesting debate is that people, generally speaking, in the abstract, think that you should be allowed to do whatever you want. But once you start asking more specific questions and adding in different considerations, then people start changing their minds. And so I think this is where the assisted suicide question will ultimately decide it, not on the, 30,000 foot question of should people have freedom to end their lives, but on more specific questions of morality.
That's a great point. Nick Rowan, managing editor at The Lamp magazine, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Lawmakers in Missouri are considering a measure to ban abortion. The constitutional amendment would outlaw abortion except in cases of rape or incest. The measure would overturn an abortion rights plan approved by voters last November. Republican lawmakers in Missouri are also seeking to ban so-called gender-affirming care for minors. Abortion activists say the vote in November should have settled the issue. Pro-life lawmakers say voters were not given the full or accurate picture of what the amendment said. We continue to see interstate legal battles over abortion laws. Just this month, New York State Governor Kathy Hochul signed a bill to protect the identities of doctors who prescribe abortion pills online across state lines. It comes after Dr. Margaret Carpenter of New York was indicted by a Louisiana grand jury in late January for prescribing abortion pills to a pregnant minor in Louisiana. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton also filed a lawsuit against that same New York doctor in December 2024 for sending abortion pills to a woman in Texas. The new law allows doctors to omit their names from abortion pill bottles and instead use the name of their healthcare practice. The state of Virginia is moving to protect doctors who prescribe the abortion pill, provide abortions, and offer so-called transgender care from criminal charges in other states. The legislation would protect doctors who perform abortions on women who come to Virginia for the deadly procedure from being extradited. Doctors who give puberty blockers and other controversial so-called treatment would also be protected, so long as the medical care was performed in the state of Virginia. The Virginia State Senate has passed the bill, and it's in consideration in the House. Meanwhile, the Virginia House and Senate approved an amendment to enshrine abortion in the state constitution and could head to the ballot box as soon as 2026. EWTN News Nightly's Owen Jensen spoke with Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin about the state's extreme abortion amendment and what actions Virginians need to take.
They want to, of course, have abortion all the way up through and including birth with no restrictions. And that is exactly what everyone in Virginia was afraid of. And they tried to suggest that it wouldn't be that extreme, but that's exactly what they have at least passed through both houses as a constitutional amendment. And this is where I think Virginians are far more centered than this constitutional amendment that has been passed. And so we just got to come together as Virginians and find common sense again.
The White House is also focusing on the transgender issue. President Donald Trump recently signed an executive order to ban biological men from women's sports. The president signed the order surrounded by female athletes. He says the order will protect opportunities for women and girls to compete in safe and fair sports. President Trump also said, quote, "The war on women's sports is over." Federal funding will be pulled from any schools that do not comply. The NCAA, the governing body for college athletics, has now banned biological men from women's sports. A leading Catholic author recently learned one of his books is available again on Amazon. Ryan Anderson's When Harry Became Sally examined the scientific, medical, philosophical, and legal debates surrounding the transgender movement. It had been banned for 4 years. The online retail giant made the book unavailable soon after Joe Biden took office. Amazon initially said the book presented same-sex identity as a mental illness, claims Anderson and the publisher strongly deny. The Washington Post made a similar claim, which it later retracted. Republican Tom Cotton says he reached out to Amazon and asked to see the exact passages that were deemed hateful. Amazon never responded. Anderson weighed in on social media, saying in part, quote, "Jeff Bezos and Amazon have done the right thing. I'm also grateful to my friends and allies who pushed for this to happen." And Ryan Anderson, president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, joins us now. Ryan, we have a lot to discuss, including the return of your book to Amazon buyers after 4 years. But first, we mentioned President Trump's executive order removing biological men from women's sports on social media. You have called this measure, quote, excellent. Why are you so pleased?
Sure. So, geez, now it's been almost a decade that we've seen the federal government try to rewrite Title IX, try to force boys who identify into girls, into the girls' locker room and onto the girls' sports teams, despite the fact that the grassroots don't like this. Soccer moms don't like this. Joe the plumber doesn't like this. It's incredibly unpopular. It's like a 70-30, 80-20 issue. And yet the left was insistent on imposing gender ideology on the nation. Thankfully, President Trump has called their bluff. And it's popular with the American people to say girls' sports are for girls. That photo that was going just viral on social media last week of President Trump surrounded by all these female athletes, that's where the American people are. They think girls' sports should be for girls. And it took someone like President Trump to finally say the emperor has no clothes when it comes to gender ideology in women's sports.
Indeed. And President Trump also issued an executive order on gender ideology. Since then, many federal government agencies have changed or removed transgender wording from their websites. What is the impact of this executive order? And can you share some examples of the changes in wording?
Sure. I mean, so what's interesting here is that, you know, in addition to the women's sports, President Trump issued an executive order titled Protecting Children from Chemical and Surgical Mutilation. And he issued a day one executive order defending women from gender ideology extremism and restoring biological truth to the federal government. And he issued an executive order ending radical indoctrination in K through 12 schooling. And all three of those additional executive orders touch on gender ideology. So one is whether or not the federal government, insofar as it funds local school systems, whether it will be funding gender ideology in K through 12 schooling, that executive order says no. One is, you know, any institution that receives federal health care funding, you can no longer engage in either chemical or surgical mutilation of children, right? And Trump is very blunt in his language. The euphemism that the left uses is, quote, gender-affirming care. I think all three of those words are inaccurate. It's not care, it's not affirming, and it's not gender, right? It's a gender identity. It's not biological sex. So what Trump has said there is that he's instructed HHS and other agencies to more or less defund pediatric child mutilation. And already we've seen various hospitals that were the pioneers of puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgery for minors have announced that they're no longer doing this. And I think that's a huge win for sanity and for children's well-being. And there's more to come. I think we're going to see more hospitals and schools realize that they're going to be on the wrong side of the federal government for the next 4 years if they try to defy these things.
Great. And now your book, When Harry Became Sally, written in 2018 and pointing to the dangers of the transgender movement. How did you find out it would be available on Amazon again? And what was your reaction?
Yeah, so you know, it's an interesting story. I started writing this book back in 2016, shortly after the Obergefell decision, because I could tell that the left was not going to declare victory and, you know, shut down the LGBT activist group, send the donors back their money. They were going to pivot to the T part of the acronym, which no one knew what it meant. We had spent two decades debating marriage. Now they were going to the T. So the book comes out February of 2018, and Amazon sold it for 3 years, from 2018 until 2021, because President Trump was in office and the Republicans had the majority in the Senate. And then February of 21, Biden's now in office. The book has disappeared. And then February of 2025, the book comes back. And I found out, to answer your question, I got a text message from a friend of mine who used to be a Senate staffer. And he said, the lobbyist that would always visit my office just sent me the link to your book. The book is back. And so it was just very interesting to me that this is transparently political. When Trump was in office the first time, they sold the book. When Biden was in office, they got rid of the book. Now that Trump is back, they don't want the FTC or the Senate Republicans opening an investigation of their business practices. So the book is back.
That's quite troubling to hear, but I'm glad at least that your book is available again. Now that it is available on Amazon, what's your hope for buyers?
Yeah, I mean, so what's interesting here is that, you know, there's a certain type of conservative author or speaker who writes intentionally or speaks intentionally in an inflammatory manner, hoping to be canceled, right? And then they can go on Fox News or something and talk about how they've been canceled and sell more books or get more speaking invitations. My approach is probably the exact opposite. This book on transgender ideology, the books that I've done on abortion, on religious liberty, on marriage, they've all been meant to be accessible to people who don't already agree with me, right? I'm in the persuasion business. I'm in the convert making business. I want to take people who don't yet agree, help them agree. I want to take people who do agree already and help them better understand the issue so they can then speak to their neighbors, speak to their classmates, speak to their colleagues, and persuade them about what the truth of the matter is. So the hope now is that more people, for 4 years, you couldn't find the book if you did a search for it on Amazon. For 4 years, the algorithms that Amazon uses to, you know, promote books, if you bought this book, you might like this book. None of that was happening for my book. So my hope is that now, you know, many more people hear about the book, they buy the book, they read the book, and then it starts changing people's minds. Because the subtitle of the book was about a transgender moment. This is not the truth. This isn't the right side of history. We will look back on this as a moment in time when we got human nature wrong, and there are human costs of getting human nature wrong.
Quite a prophetic voice. Thank you so much, Ryan Anderson.
No, happy to be with you.
The Center for Disease Control recently released new data on the number of women in the U.S. who die during pregnancy or childbirth. The CDC report says that between 2022 and 2023, the maternal mortality rate fell from 22.3 per 100,000 live births to 18.6. That is a decline of nearly 17% and the lowest figure since 2018. The CDC numbers are good news especially in the wake of the overturning of Roe v. Wade. But one pro-life analyst says the mainstream media did not mention the decline in deaths. Michael New says this is in part because they predicted strong pro-life laws would hurt public health. And now the numbers are proving the opposite.
Anytime strong pro-life laws are passed, the media tries to make the case this is going to be a public health disaster. And that's almost never the case. Countries that have strong pro-life laws often have very good public health records. Poland, which has some of the strongest pro-life laws in Europe, has among the lowest maternal mortality rates. Malta, which has strong pro-life laws, also has positive public health outcomes. Before they legalized abortion in 2017, Ireland had lower maternal mortality rates than England, Wales, Scotland, and a lot of peer countries. So pro-life laws go good hand in hand with good public health.
On Tuesday, February 11th, the church celebrated the 33rd World Day of the Sick. Catholics are invited to reflect more deeply on the church's teachings about sickness and caring for the sick. Pope Francis released a message saying in part, "Dear brothers and sisters who are ill or who care for the suffering, in this Jubilee, you play an especially important part. Your journey together is a sign for everyone." The 88-year-old Holy Father has faced many health challenges in recent years, including knee problems that require him to move around in a wheelchair. He also has had trouble breathing and recently suffered a fall, resulting in an arm injury. The World Day of the Sick is observed annually on the liturgical memorial of Our Lady of Lourdes, a powerful intercessor for the sick. Coming up, the only maternity home of its kind in the United States. What one maternity home is doing on a college campus to serve new moms. We tell you that story next on EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Welcome back. We turn now to a one-of-a-kind maternity home in a unique location, a college campus in Belmont, North Carolina. This maternity home, known as Mira Via, meaning miraculous way in Latin, houses students facing unplanned pregnancies, providing them the support they need to pursue motherhood and a degree.
Our veils are nice and soft, so that should we be holding a baby, you could just... It looks like Our Lady, and you wrap your veil around, and it's a nice soft veil for the baby, so the babies love it.
Spiritual mothers care for babies and their mothers at a maternity home found on the campus of Belmont Abbey College near Charlotte, North Carolina. A one-of-its-kind model for mothers finding themselves pregnant in college, this maternity home serves young women pursuing a degree and motherhood.
I actually was at Belmont Abbey College already as a student. So I played lacrosse, found out I was pregnant, and then found out about Mira Via and Debbie, and they took me in so graciously.
Emilia Pippen is just one of thousands of women Mira Via has served since its opening in 2013. Mira Via provides a place to stay at no cost, tuition assistance, and supplies for her baby.
We know the need is out there, and we welcome women from all over the country. We've had people from as far away as Texas come to North Carolina because there's no other place for them to go. But they can go to any school, they can go online, they can commute anywhere.
Although many attend Belmont Abbey College while staying at Mira Via,
mothers can attend any college or university of their choosing. With 15 private rooms, which host around 16 women a year, Miravia creates a strong community among the mothers, mentors, and religious.
I really think that the relationships that I formed there are what really guided me to being the woman that I am today and being the mom that I am today. And I say this all the time, some of my closest friends that I came out of there with, I still use their guidance today.
So it was sweet when we were living there. There were so many children. We were all just became sister, 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 sister. And they knew a habit meant a sister. So they would yell after you, sister, sister.
And as Executive Director Debbie Kappen points out, this community is exactly the goal.
We provide this environment where they can just, you know, live their lives, continue their education, be with other friends that are going through the same thing they're going through. And it's really just a fun environment where it's life in community with a goal of graduating.
With Miravia moms serving a total of over 2,000 hours in the classroom, many receive their degree and pursue career goals, but many return to give back to the community.
They want to stay connected. And for instance, we had one mom who became a police officer. And at our last banquet, she was the security detail for our banquet speaker. You know, it's all those little things that they give in the ways that they can.
Emilia gives back by being the residential supervisor, a house mom to the residents.
I also play a significant role in mentoring the moms and kind of giving guidance, just because I can give them two different perspectives of being a past resident and also being a worker or employee of Miravia.
Surprisingly, Miravia is the only maternity home of its kind in the country. Abbot Placid Solari, the chancellor of Belmont Abbey College, hopes to share this model with other campuses nationwide.
In fact, it seems to me every college and university ought to have a Miravia attached to them. So I hope we can be a model. I hope we can be a resource center for other, particularly Catholic colleges, but any college or university.
To date, Miravia has welcomed women from 10 different states who have attended 12 different colleges or universities. As the word spreads, hopefully this model will be adopted on more campuses, spreading messages like Amelia's.
You were chosen for a time like this, and our child, and God chose us to be the mother of this like precious soul and this precious life. And it's like our mission now to grow this life and lead this soul into heaven.
It's great to see organizations debunk the myth that women have to choose between their baby and finishing school. To learn more about the college residence as well as their pregnancy resource center, visit miravia.org. Next week, a special broadcast by EWTN News Vatican Bureau correspondent Colin Flynn will air in lieu of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. The special report will focus on South Sudan, a country Pope Francis visited 3 years ago this month. This report looks at the work of the Catholic Church to help educate and develop the world's youngest nation. That is next Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.